today and bring home a signed print or exhibition catalog from the museum store. For details, visit tmora.org.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 72. Tonight, clear with a low around 56. Thursday, sunny with a high near 76. And Friday, showers and storms with a high around 77. Stay cool this summer by having the Green Home Doctor weatherize your home. They're passionate about the environment both in and outside your home. The Green Home Doctor doesn't use subcontractors, and they even help you get rebates from Xcel and CenterPoint. So get started towards a more comfortable home by visiting greenhomedr.com.
Good afternoon, AM 950, of course, your favorite radio station, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's like Padgett in here at drive time, 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, at least there in Minneapolis. I'm on the road again, coming to you, and this time from the Golden State of California, from sea to shining sea, doing some work around this Vote Common Good effort that I'm going to be a part of this fall, and hope you encourage all of you to think about our Minneapolis stop on October 10th. We're calling people to consider the common good when they vote this fall, because we all seem to know what good is. You know what good is in your heart. We all know good. And this Republican Trump thing, it's no good. So we're going to ask people to come out and do their voting. So out here, you know, it's still early in the day, but in Minneapolis, 4 o'clock. So good to be with you. Good to be with you today, Brett.
Yeah, definitely. Good to be with you here, too. This is one of those rare times of year where Minnesota is probably as warm, if not warmer, than Northern California.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because when people, especially in California, hear that I'm from Minnesota, they always go immediately to weather. And somehow, especially for native Californians, they just think it's perpetually winter in Minnesota. I don't know why. I don't think they've thought a lot about it. I think their emotional response is, well, it must really be cold there. And then as it turns out, it doesn't help when you say, well, no, it kind of gets cold in the winter and hot in the summer. Then they really double down on their, well, that's why you should move to California. But, you know, California is a great, great state. I love it. The weather's dandy out here, but it's nothing like the great state of Minnesota. I live in Minnesota on purpose, like a lot of us do. And I find it to be just the best state, even with all the weather that goes on. People bring this up all the time. I'd say, I think, you know, season by season, still pick Minnesota.
Do they even have a good state fair in California? Do they even have one is a better question.
Well, they do. It's such a large state that their fairs tend to be, I was just talking with a friend about this, they have these fairgrounds, but they'd call them county fairgrounds. But they're large. We just drove by one today and that came up, and, the population is big in California, of course, but the land mass is also just enormous, which we all know if you look on a map, right? It covers, you know, half of the country, north to south. So yeah, they have fairs like that, but nothing's like the Great Minnesota Get Together. You know, I think it's the second largest fair attendance wise in the country. At least it used to be. I don't know if that's still true. I think Texas had a bigger one.
Well, they got a bigger population though. So
yeah. What's that in Texas?
Yeah. They could probably draw more that way. Yeah.
Yeah. As they're glad to say, everything's bigger in Texas. you know, that's sort of the thing they have going for them. Hey, and you know, thinking of things being bigger and smaller, there is a lot at stake in this fall's election, right? As you and I were talking during the break, there's a lot going on because, as we know, our state House and state Senate makes decisions about how the congressional districts, the federal congressional districts, are drawn. And Minnesota is on the bubble because of its population to perhaps reducing our number of congressional districts from 8 down to 7. And I really appreciate this article you sent around from MinnPost. People can look it up in the politics and policy section of MinnPost today, because it lays out what's at risk. And Brett, when we were talking, you had a really interesting point that I think it's worth listeners hearing about, that if Republicans get control of the legislature in Minnesota and keep control of it, they're going to make some decisions to downsize.
Okay.
So give people a little picture of what's going on with that.
Yeah, I just lost you for just a second there, Doug, but I got the gist of what you're saying, and yeah, what you're saying is absolutely true. So the way you gerrymander, this isn't just true in Minnesota, it's true pretty much everywhere, is you need what's called that trifecta of having the state house, the state senate, and the governor. And of course, Republicans picked up a ton of those trifectas after the 2010 election, and that's why we have so many gerrymandered Republican states. Now, it's big here in Minnesota. If Republicans pull that off, if Jeff Johnson becomes our governor this year, and if Republicans have control of the legislature in 2020, they get to draw those new districts after the 2020 census, which is not going to be good for us here in Minnesota because we're going to lose one congressional district. And at least my prediction is if Republicans control things, they're going to try to merge as much as CD4 and CD5 together as possible to create one giant urban liberal district. It's kind of that cracking and packing strategy where they'll try to put as many liberal precincts, as many liberal precincts into one district as possible so they can have then a bunch of conservative districts. That's exactly what they did in Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida. So that's why you got to vote in 2018 because, yeah, if we have a combined CD4 and CD5, I mean, we could be looking at 5 or 6 Republican congressional members just due to gerrymandering.
Yeah, and this is where it matters for this voting at the state legislature level, right? So a lot of people, you know, for our civics class for the afternoon, a lot of people don't recognize that these kinds of decisions that we call gerrymandering are actually done at the state legislature level and with governors. It's not done at the congressional level. So we shake our fists because we look at the congressional districts and see that they look so awkward and they're clearly trying to account for something. And it's not always population. We can talk here in a moment about why you have to draw a congressional district so that you're balancing population with the number of representatives that of people that represent that population. But it's at the legislative level and the governor's level that these decisions are made. So this is the way that government is interlinked, that a lot of people think, well, I don't pay a lot of attention to who's going to be my state representative. So I think about our listeners, you know, we think a lot about this, people around here at AM 950. But sometimes you'll be at a picnic over Labor Day and you'll start talking about elections and people will get tired of talking about Donald Trump and throw their hands up. You can pivot that conversation to saying, well, here's why it's important you get out and vote and that we make sure that the governorship and the state house and the state senate are in the hands of people who are going to make sure that the decisions made around who represents us at the federal level stay consistent with what most of us would say. That seems like a reasonable way to set a congressional district, which, you know, frankly, not a lot of people think about how your congressional district is set. But there are people who worry about that, and there are state legislators and our governor, and this is why it matters both at the state level and at the federal level.
Yeah, and even though, as we kind of talked about, it's a nerdy subject to talk about, but it's super important. It's the reason why it's pretty much been impossible for Democrats to take a House majority at the federal level for 8 years. I think if we had someone, I think it was on 538, they said if we had non-gerrymandered districts, Democrats would have won the House of Representatives back in 2012. And if you even go back to gerrymandering, we were talking about how important it is to vote on the local level. In 2010, all it would have taken was a few thousand votes for that election to go Tom Emmer's way rather than Mark Dayton. And if that was the case, Republicans would have had that trifecta and we would have had gerrymandered districts. That's how close it was. That's why you got to vote in these elections. That's why I think this fall's elections are so important all around the country, especially at the governor's level, because if you get Democratic governors in Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, that essentially blocks gerrymandering for the next 4 years, and it blocks gerrymandering after 2020 because you need those three things. You need the governor, the state house, and the state senate all on one side to be able to gerrymander. And if we get a bunch of Democratic governors, we at least block gerrymandering during the next cycle.
Yeah, well, that's a great point, Brett. And I guess the fourth leg of that stool for that trifecta is that you need to have control of those three parts of government in a year, in a census year in which you're going to be redrawing the districts, right? So that's all driven by a 10-year cycle of the census. So that's also what matters. So this year, 2020, all of these pieces are coming together, right? This huge national crisis at the presidential level, what's going to happen with the election of a governor in this particular year and the election of the legislature is all going to come down on a year in which the census is also in play. So it really matters. There's all these different cycles, right? There's a 2-year cycle for representatives at the state, at the House level or at the federal level. And then there's 6 years for senators and there's 4 years for president. And then there's 10-year cycles for the redrawing of the congressional lines based on the census. So there's all these kind of calendars. And sometimes, like people that fear for the end of the dawning of the apocalypse, when all of those calendars come together, man, this 2020 and 2018 is just the biggest year. Mm-hmm. So this period of time from 2018 to 2020, this is the great coming together of all of these. Hey, Gary from Minneapolis, you've got an idea about how people get active in this important topic.
Yeah, the Republican voters tend to be older and more white, better off financially, and they get to the polls and vote. And those evangelicals are extremely voting a lot. And we got to get our voters out to keep this state in good shape. Dayton, you talked about phone banking or getting people out to vote. If you can't volunteer with the DFL or a candidate, I phone banked for Dayton quite a bit that year. And the polls show him way ahead. He just barely got in. The polls were off. And when you help, like you say, for instance, you help Tim Walz or Tina Smith, you're helping all the Democrats because you sometimes mention the legislative races and they run together a lot. And I just urge, do more than vote if you can, any way you can. Knock on doors, phone bank, tell your friends. The younger ones got to get out and vote more because they're pretty much our base now, the younger generation.
Hey, Gary, I appreciate that a lot. Thanks for that call. I think it is, I agree with you, it's so important for turnout. I also think now between Labor Day and October 31st, Labor Day to Halloween, this is not only a time when we can turn out the vote, but when you can turn some hearts and minds. So I'd encourage all of us to find those people who are right on the edge. Turn that heart and mind between now and November 1st, and then November 1st, November 6th, we'll work on turning out the vote. Let's get some of those newly enraged voters fully committed to engaging in this process. A constant work for our civic life. And so we're doing around here at AM 950, helping us community and in our elected office. Doug Padgett, we'll be back here after the break, AM 950.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. AM 950 listeners know I've been a big supporter of the station. I'm also a job creator. I've assembled a team of the highest quality technicians to ensure our reputation continues to grow. After all, a job creator is simply someone who responds to customer demand. That demand has remained strong at PJW because we deliver quality the first time around. See why it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Burger Mo's gorgeous patio is open for the season. Enjoy nightly happy hours, more than 60 beers on tap, and the weather while you watch your favorite game on the outdoor screen. And don't miss live music Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Offering 20 fresh, never-frozen burger varieties, Burger Mo's also offers delicious appetizers, soups, salads, as well as unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Burger Mo's is located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul with plenty of free parking and online at burgermo's.com.
At Pride Institute, being LGBTQ+ is the norm, not the exception. Their highly trained and skilled staff understand your issues and will help you live a happy, healthy life as a proud LGBTQ+ person. They offer you hope to overcome your addiction and live the life you want. Their treatment programs are designed to assist you in developing the knowledge, skills, and attitudes for long-term recovery. Therapy groups include health education, LGBTQ issues, HIV and chronic illness, trauma, grief and loss, transgender support, nicotine recovery education, and sexual health. Pride Institute offers a residential treatment program, a partial hospitalization program that includes day programming with lodging, and an intensive outpatient program. If you or someone in your life can benefit from guidance and coping skills, life balance, and other tools necessary for long-term recovery, check them out at pride-institute.com or call 800-547-7433 now.
Hey, welcome back to AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Hey, Brett, I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I went to the library and checked out some books. And I distinctly remember what happened when I forgot to return those books at the little public library. It was over in Golden Valley, the public library off of, I think, Winnetka Avenue, Highway 55. And one of the more shameful moments of my childhood, you know, where I just felt horrible about myself, was this time when I went in to check out a book, and I had my library card, and the person said, "You can't check out that book because you owe library late fees at the library." Terrible feeling. So when I saw this little story today that St. Paul is going to drop overdue library fees, I flashed back to, I don't know, sort of the early 70s and thought, oh, I am so glad to hear that. It always seemed like the most unfair thing to me that you got charged money for returning a book late. It stuck in my craw from the time I was a kid. And so to see this story today, really big news.
Yeah, it is big news for St. Paul. St. Paul Mayor Melvin Carter was talking about doing that. And he says overall, and this is just a shocking number to me, apparently, the city has $2.5 million in uncollected debt to the library system, which is that's a ton of money. But what's interesting, though, is that he said most people, I think he said the average fine that people have accrued is only like $33. But if you have as little as $10, you can still be blocked by the library. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I imagine that I can't remember how much I owed in my shameful experience standing in the library and being told, go home and get money and come back and pay this thing, which I never did. And honestly, I haven't had a library card since. This is honest to God truth. I have not had a public library card.
I wonder if you're still on the blacklist at that local library. They got Doug That's Padgett's awesome. Name there saying, well, after 40, 50 years, however long that was, so we're coming back after you.
Yeah, would that be great if I went in like I owed the Hennepin County Library System hundreds of dollars because I didn't return my library books? I just think it's such a curious thing, right, that we it's one of the questions that we always have in our society, which is how do we decide what we pay for individually? And how do we decide what's included for being a citizen, right? Like you get to have a public water fountain. You get to walk on public sidewalks. If you pay taxes or no taxes, you could be somebody who's just living with someone. You don't pay any rent. You don't pay any property taxes. You still get to walk down the street. We let everyone do it. For the most part, we have highways and side streets that people can drive on for free and ride on without having to pay. But then some things we make people pay for, right? We don't have just free food sitting around unless your income reaches a certain level. And then you have to go through a really complicated system to get support. At the library, and this is one of the questions we're always asking in our society, right? What's included and what should people pay for separately? And I think a big question happening in our society is, do the prospects of capitalism continue to hold up as we thought that they once did? And maybe more things should be included in the public experience and less things in the private sector. That's been an age-old question for the American economic and political system. And it's curious because the libraries are one of these places where they kind of switch the rules on you. One of the great innovations of a library is that you can go in and check out material for free, right? Great, great idea. Now, I will tell you, as a published author, authors have a curious and uneasy relationship with the library.
Well, we can get into this another day, but I'd like to hear more about that. I never thought about that aspect.
Well, to an author, it can feel a bit like the Napster of books. Remember Napster, that service that used to allow you to spread copyrighted music? You know, it's a rewarding thing at one level when a reader comes up and says, "Hey, I read your book and I really enjoyed it." And you say, "Oh, thanks so much." And then they say, I checked it out from the library, because you realize, you know, that's, if that's how you make your living, that person just read your book for free. Now, the library does buy a copy, but just the one, and then they let dozens or hundreds or thousands of people read it for free. So that's a separate topic that we could get into another time about the strangeness of copyright law. But what libraries do in this curious way is they say, well, the books are free, the resources are free, DVDs, videos are free, unless you don't return them on time. And if you don't return them on time, then you start to build up this charge. And libraries, as the article points out, often will depend on late fees in order to fund their budget. So what happens is people who are less good at returning things on time for whatever reason, personal organization, they forgot, they don't get back to the library a lot, do end up paying for the services of the library if they keep it too long. So I'm glad that the mayor and that the city council in St. Paul is taking the lead on this and saying that they're going to get rid of these fines by putting some money in the budget to cover what would traditionally be the late fees that the library system wants to pay.
Yeah, it's an interesting proposal. I'm kind of with you on that as well. We do have to evaluate what is a societal cost versus something that we have to pay for. And the other thing you brought up too, which I didn't catch as well, is that some of these libraries actually do rely on those late fees. It kind of reminds me on how cities sometimes rely on parking tickets or speeding tickets issued by the police.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We build in penalty budgets, knowing that people are gonna violate something. Banks do the same thing. I mean, this is one of the big problems with the current banking system. Banks used to make their money off of lending and charging interest. Now, if you look at any of the income streams from the major banks, a significant number are from overdraft fees and other kinds of fees, where now they're not making their money off of lending and interest, which can seem fair. It's off of a series of fees that people are being charged on a regular basis, service fees and late fees and overdraft fees. And I think that's, you might remember back in the dark days of the Tim Pawlenty administration, he tried to say that a fee wasn't a tax. Remember those days when you make a distinction between a fee and a tax? I didn't raise taxes. I lowered taxes. I only raised fees. Well, when you're a citizen and you have to pay money to operate, or your state government, that's pretty much tax. Hey, Robin from Fridley, you've got some thoughts here on library fees. What are your thoughts on how we handle library fees?
Yeah, well, I have a little different viewpoint on it.
I hope so.
Did you say that they're proposing to replace the fees with some other kind of funding?
Yeah, that's how I understand the article, because I think that the St. Paul libraries don't manage all the library systems. So if there's a late fee, they'll put that into the city budget. If I've read the article right, do you know something different about that?
Yeah, I really get that. For one thing, I want to point out that libraries get forced into depending on late fees because they're not being provided with adequate funds from other public sources. So from our tax dollars. But from the point of some view of someone who's a heavy library user, which
yes.
I am.
Yes.
One of the things that late fees do to, I don't know how they are effective they're going to be in some recalcitrant cases, but when you take something out from the library, you're entering into a contractual agreement in which many people are sharing that resource. And if you just hang on to it and don't bother to return it, oftentimes there's people waiting to use that resource. And I think in that case, it's fair to charge a fee because you're not really respecting the fact that this is a resource that's being shared by everyone and other people have need or want of it.
So, yeah, I get
you. Aren't respectful of the agreement they're making.
Robin, I don't want to get too personal, but have you had to carry any library fees yourself, or are you good at returning all of your resources?
Yeah, I'm in Anoka County, and they charge my library charges 30 cents a day if you're late.
Yeah.
Late on a few occasions, mostly because I chose either because I wasn't feeling well or just didn't feel like going out in all that weather. I chose not to return something on time. But in that case, I'm really happy to pay the fee because I know that's helping the library to purchase more books and more movies and more tapes. And I'm happy to support it a little more.
I appreciate that. I think you're onto something, Robin. I got to cut you off because we're going to go into a commercial break here. But I wonder if that's not another way we could handle library fees is for people to be encouraged to make a donation to the library fund instead of burying it back in the fees for people that are late. Lots to think about. Robin, really appreciate your call. Hey, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We're going to be back with Steve Morse, and we're going to talk about the environment here after the break.
Hello, friends. I've been talking to you about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens, Minnesota's first green cemetery dedicated to celebrating life and protecting our environment. One of the many wonderful things they have is something called the Living Urn. Ashes are buried in an urn with seedlings, ultimately coming back to life as a glorious tree. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Why don't you log on to the website, mngreengraves.com. Learn more about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. See if it might be something that's meaningful for you.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show, your source for elder care and caregiver solutions, inviting you to listen to our live call-in show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding elder care and caregiver issues to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your best quality of life. Please join us this Saturday from noon to 1 for the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show and learn more about us at minnesotahospice.com.
Enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch away from the kitchen at Milda's Cafe, now open 7 days a week. Milda's Cafe has been cooking up family favorites since 1964. Grab a coffee and sit down for a delicious Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Stop in for lunch where you'll find authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open weekdays 6 to 3, weekends 8 to 2. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
Hi, this is Matt from the Green Home Doctors. Do your ceilings show signs of unwanted moisture? Is your home warmer than you want? This means your insulation needs a tune-up and you're leaking expensive air conditioning in the summer. Green Home Doctors analyze your home with specialized equipment and prescribe a remedy that will save you money and save you energy, no matter what the season. Take advantage of rebates from Xcel Energy and CenterPoint Energy and make your home healthier today. Visit greenhomedr.com.
Hi, Minnesota. Norman Goldman here. Join me every weekday from 5 to 8 p.m. for some clarity, wit, and wisdom on the latest issues of the day here on AM 950. Today on the show, the aftermath of the death of Senator McCain continues to roil our politics and our nation. Also, the Catholic Church is going berserk. Have you noticed? Join me for 3 live hours of the Norman Goldman Show every weeknight here from 5 to 8 on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 72. Tonight, clear with a low around 56. Thursday, sunny with a high near 76. And Friday, showers and storms with a high around 77. The Downtowner Woodfire Grill is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They have daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meals, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine Mondays and Tuesdays except on Xcel Energy event nights. They have gift certificates available, too. Located at 253 West 7th Street in downtown St. Paul. More at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Hey, welcome back. AM 950. Drive time, 4 to 5 o'clock. And even though it's Wednesday, I want to put the word out, we are talking to Steve Morse from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. I often talk to Steve on Thursdays, so I don't want any of the regulars to get confused about what day it is. It is Wednesday, and we need to have Steve a day early today. Hey, Steve, nice to chat with you.
Hey, great to be here, and thanks for being a little flexible on the schedule this week.
If we're not anything, we are flexible around here, so glad to have you. Hey, the other day, I think it was back in the early August, August 10th or so, there was a big pollution control agencies putting out an air quality alert in Minnesota. And I think maybe that was from the wildfire smoke or something in the air.
Right.
But boy, it just seems to me that these air quality alerts are happening more and more often in Minnesota than what I remember. And
And I know you know a lot about that, and we're going to talk about that today. So thanks. What is going on with the air quality in Minnesota?
That's a really good question. And maybe there are two dimensions to that. We are seeing these recent phenomena of these wildfire-induced alerts. We are seeing more of those. I think we had a couple of weekends here earlier in the month with those wildfire-induced alerts. So that is more frequent. On the flip side, more the conventional alerts that are coming from our factories, our power plants, and from our cars, I think we're seeing less of, and that's a really good thing. We're making progress in that regard.
Yeah, that's great news. So on some levels, the air is getting better, you're saying, save these wildfires. And
that's what's so confusing sometimes about the whole issue about climate and air quality is we have some things that are getting worse, and that's the fires.
Yeah.
But other things we are making some progress on. We've made tremendous progress on shutting down coal plants, particularly here in the metropolitan area, on vehicle emissions, and we're doing that by increasing the mileage standards for vehicles, and other ways of cleaning up, school buses and things like that. And so we are making some progress in those areas. But what's interesting is we're also learning more about the impacts of air quality issues, the soot and the ozone that is problematic for people. We're learning just what the impacts of those are, and that the asthma rates, for example, are roughly 67% higher than a child in the metro area will be hospitalized for asthma than in greater Minnesota, and that's because of all the cars and all the other pollution coming from industry and power plants. And in Minnesota, roughly, one in 14 people suffer from asthma, and so that's a really big deal, and it affects people's life, it affects their quality of life, and it ultimately results in more people dying earlier.
And what about this shift to natural gas? Is that the solution to this? I hear that a lot, that they want to frack into the ground and try to release all this natural gas because it's really the alternative for the environment and for air quality.
Well, there's no doubt that moving from coal, which is probably the dinosaur of the fossil fuels, if you will, to natural gas, which is still a fossil fuel, is an improvement in terms of air quality, in terms of cost, in terms of carbon emissions also, which are global warming gases. But it's not the solution. It's an improvement, but it's not the solution. I mean, what we really have to do is we really have to transition off of all the fossil fuels, and it's just a question of how fast and how well we can do that without radically disrupting our economy and our operations and our economy and our lifestyles. What we really have to think about is how do we transition to electric vehicles, and how do we electrify the grid as much as possible with renewables? And what's interesting is we are seeing now where the cost of wind, for example, new wind, is now less than just running an existing coal plant. And so, the economics on renewables are really taking over, with the cost of solar coming down precipitously and the cost of wind doing the same, and it has come down a lot, so that the economics are really, really what's driving this now. And, as much as some people like to think otherwise, we are making progress on that front.
Hey, Steve, one of the questions that I wanted to ask, and it's a good time. I was talking with some friends the other day, and I thought, I'm going to ask Steve about this next time he's on the show. they're able to set aside, they get on their electric bill, they can pay extra to be funding, or what they said at this little dinner we were at, that they buy clean fuel or clean electricity.
Right.
Can you just say a little bit about how that works? Are they actually getting different electricity, or are they paying a premium in order to invest in wind? But doesn't all the electricity kind of get mixed up together? You know what I'm asking? I don't want to sound
right. Yeah. I think that's an excellent question. People do pay more so that they can get more than what is just normally on the grid. You know, we are moving up, I forget what the number is now, you know, we're moving up over you know, into the 20% of our power that's renewable, largely wind and some solar, you know, on the grid. Especially in the XL territory, it's going up rapidly. But you can pay additionally, and XL, you know, commits to take that money and invest it in more renewables. What's interesting now, as I was just saying, you know, the XL CEO said, you know, it's cheaper for us to buy new wind than to run an existing coal plant. And so, you know, what we really need to do is just continue to provide pressure on the whole industry to convert and do it more quickly. But yes, you can do that, and it does provide more resources going into these renewables. Does that overall move the utility more quickly to converting to renewables? I'm not sure. I think you should ask Xcel that. That's a really excellent question. But what's interesting is that, you know, an electron on the grid is an electron on the grid. It's a fungible
right,
electron.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
you know,
right,
you can't tell when you turn on your power switch if it's coming from coal, natural gas, nuclear, or renewables. But you can, you know, pay that extra as an incentive for the utility to put in more renewables.
Well, it's curious that you say that, because that was the center of our conversation. At some point I realized I didn't want to be the bearer of bad news. They were speaking about it as if they were driving an electric car instead of a gas car, right? Like that was sort of the comparison. Like, no, when I buy my electricity, I buy it from renewable resources, and other people buy it from non-renewable resources. That's why I pay extra, like an electric car. And I thought, well, I don't know if that's the comparison or not, but it sure seems
right,
like it's a good choice, especially with the Trump administration doing what they're doing by trying to roll back the clean power plan. And that if the federal government's not going to continue to push forward on helping for us to move toward renewable and clean energy, at least people can do that with their own financial choices.
Right. Yeah. And it definitely is an additive, and it is another incentive for the utilities to move forward. But, you know, this whole thing with President Trump now, you know, trying to undo the Clean Power Plan and is just kind of ludicrous on its surface. As I said earlier, you know, we've documented that, you know, we're saving lives, we're protecting people's health, and we're saving money with this transition from coal and natural gas into renewables. And the idea that President Trump would say, well, no, we're going to slow this down, is just on his face. It's irresponsible is what it is. Even his own agency, the EPA, you know, came out and said, you know, this revision, if it goes through, is going to be 1,400 premature deaths, another 48,000 exacerbated asthma cases. And one thing I think a lot of parents will find interesting, an additional 21,000 days of missed school from kids with asthma attacks. I mean, so it's kind of crazy, and the economics just don't make sense anymore. I mean, these are dinosaurs defending dinosaur fuel. You know, so
good line.
What's interesting is I guess my point is they can't really undo the economic forces that have been put into place. It may extend some coal plants for some time. I'm not sure how much of an impact they'll have here in Minnesota. You know, Xcel has an aggressive schedule to decarbonize their system. You know, significantly. Not entirely, but very significantly. So, you know, I look at this as a kind of a pathetic attempt to pander to a certain constituency, you know, with disregard of the science and the economics.
It seems to me that the two questions about where we get our power from and how that impacts our environment. One is where the energy comes from, as you say, from, you know, the remnants of dinosaurs that we find in coal. And the other is how much energy we need to use,
yeah,
right? Those are both, and I imagine that in the environmental spaces and movements, there's some disagreement about which one more energy should be put into, no pun intended. But do you have a sense of if people are wondering what they can do to be more engaged, is there one of those that you feel like is more electron for the buck?
You know, You know, we have made such strides. That's a really good question, because the answer is, of course, they're both important. You know, so how much you consume and then what it is that you consume are both really important. We have made tremendous strides, and as I say, the economics are really turning, not as quickly as we'd like, but they really have turned on renewables versus coal. It's a question of how long it will take to get to really high levels, like 80, 90, 100% renewables into our system that is really out there. But, we can go 50, 60, 70% right now. So we still have a long way to go just with the current technology just to implement that. So to me, I really feel the big opportunities now are in the energy efficiency side of the spectrum, because there's so much that can be done. It's a tremendous opportunity for job growth right here in our state with retrofitting buildings, new transportation systems, building out public transportation systems. So the idea of reducing the overall consumption, I think is really it's sometimes not as glitzy or sexy, if you will, but it really is where we have a lot of big opportunities to do a heck of a lot more right here in the state of Minnesota and create great jobs along the way.
Well, speaking of glitzy and sexy conversations about the environment, that's Steve Morse from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, Executive Director. Steve, thanks for all the good work you're doing, for coming to see us a day early. I hope it's because you've got big Labor Day plans this weekend.
No, I wish it were, but just another commitment that I can't get out of. So this works really well to come today. And I encourage people to visit mepartnership.org if they want to know more about these issues or get engaged on issues as they come up in the administration or legislative process.
I love it. Me Partnership, because the environment's about all of us, including me. So thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Hey, we'll be back here after the break. AM 950, your voice of Minnesota.
Trending electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
Stages Theater Company is dedicated to creating a space where diverse opinions, courageous dialogue, and community engagement is not only valued, but vital to our shared artistic and educational success. Stages Theater Company creates a welcoming home for all. For over 30 years, Stages has supported quality theater programming for children. Stages gives opportunities for youth to be on stage, backstage, in the audience, and in the classroom. Whether you come to see a show, enroll a young person in a workshop, or benefit from their outreach programs in the community, Stages brings art to life. Learn about Stages Theater by going to stagestheater.org and become part of the magic of live theater by taking your family to an amazing show or enrolling someone you love in an education program. Stages Theater Company operates out of the Hopkins Center for the Arts, located in Main Street in the heart of downtown Hopkins. For more information on Stages Theater, go to stagestheater.org. That's stagestheater.org.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I have seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
The State Fair has always been full of treats. From corn dogs to cheese curds to anything on a stick, now you can add a new furnace and air conditioner to that list. Announcing Standard Heating and Air Conditioning State Fair Sale. Get a new air conditioner for just $2,500 when you install a new high-efficiency furnace by September 3rd. Discover more about how you can take advantage of Standard State Fair sale at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Back AM 950 drive time conversation. We're talking just before that time with Steve Morse there about the environment and how important all that is, about the environment at the libraries over there in the Twin Cities. And I know that some people were wanting to give their 2 cents on the topic, maybe not their 30 cents to the library in fines, but wanted to contribute their thoughts. So if you want to add your thoughts about the library, give us a call, 952-946-6205, and we'd be glad to talk with you about it. If you're just tuning in now, you know, say you got out of work a little bit late and a little later than the start of the show, and you didn't hear that the people over in St. Paul have decided to change the way they treat people returning books that they've kept too long. And now there's two problems at the library, right? One is that somebody keeps a book, loses a book, doesn't want to return it, and it's a lost item to the library. Well, that's going to stay as something you have to pay for. You don't get the library is not going to be your place to just come take a book and keep it the rest of your life. But what they're going to do is they're going to remove the penalty for people checking out books. And part of their rationale is that a number of years ago over in the city of St. Paul, they already removed the penalty on children's books and found that the books were returned at the same rate as when they offered the penalty. The difference was that people didn't have to be banned from the library or come up with a bunch of money to pay them. And, you know, Brett, as you had brought up, there was like $2.5 million in outstanding uncollected debt that blocked upwards of 51,000 people from going to the library. So I guess much like the experience that I had as a kid, where I didn't ever go back to the library, and still don't want to go over there now because I'm not sure what I owe them, that 51,000 people are blocked from checking books out of the library. And that's the problem they're trying to solve. So I really like this idea that getting rid of the library fine was something that they were trying to do in order to increase participation for people in the library, which is so important, right? That more people engage with the materials and with the entire flow of what happens at the library. But I thought that's interesting that the removing the fee on children's books, they didn't see a difference in return rates. In other words, as one of the people who was working on this program said in the article, fines don't impact behavior, that it just doesn't work to say we're going to fine people and then they will return it. I guess you'd have to come up with, as Robin was saying in the earlier segment, you have to come up with something so that people, there's some response from the library if someone does keep books beyond the agreed upon time, especially those very popular ones that people are waiting for. I will say, you know, that as an author, that doesn't happen with my books in the library if they're available at your library, and I sure hope they are. You're probably free to check that one out and keep it as long as you like. I don't think there's going to be a long line of people. But some of the more popular items in the library, you know, it's a competitive system. And I don't know what they would do short of financial penalties. But I do think there's better ways to motivate people. So if you've got thoughts about that and you wanted to get into that earlier segment and we went too long, give us a call, 952-946-6205. How about you, Brett? Have you been over to the library recently?
Oh, man, I'm kind of ashamed to say I probably haven't been to the library in 7 or 8 years since when I had to study for a test back at the end of my college days. That was about the last time I was there.
Well, let me tell you, if you find your way into one of our, at least one of the Hennepin County libraries, I haven't spent a lot of time in the other county libraries, but in the Hennepin County libraries, they don't feel like the libraries of old. They're really not even about books primarily. They are learning centers. There's classes that go on. There's community events. There's all kinds of online learning. Like, they are really centers of thought and connection, much more than just a place where they're distributing where they are distributing materials and books. Certainly, they do that, but they're much more robust than that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the one that's by my place. I live over by Ridgedale, and they've closed that library for, I think, close to a year. In fact, I think it still might be closed as they're doing all sorts of remodeling and really doing some pretty heavy upgrades. So I'm kind of excited to see what's actually going to be there, because I'm sure, as what you're saying, there's going to be a lot of those new technological innovations, lots of community programs. It'll be more than just books, I'm guessing, is what they're going to be doing
there. Well, and that's the thing. I'm guessing that the St. Paul Library people are also thinking about is that they don't want someone keeping an article that they checked out too long to be a hindrance for them to come into the library, because there's so many other benefits that are there. And that's one of the things that I think kind of represents a whole view of civic life, and that civic life is supported by the laws and the statutes that are made by politicians. This is why who we elect becomes important, because they're the people who do the work, whether that's at the mayor's office or the city council or at the state or federal level. They're the ones who arrange for our civic engagement to have a particular structure to it. And a library is one of those is a play out of a particular imagination. Right? How is it that we're going to live with each other? What is it that you have to buy yourself, and what is it that you can use as a part of the collective, as a part of the society? And that's really where politics and civic life come together. And I know a lot of people want to be civically engaged, but not politically active. And you know, that's you're right. That's one of our civic freedoms, that you don't have to engage. But if you care about what our civic life is about, how we are with one another, how we organize, then somebody I was talking to who's running for office, I can't remember, I think it was on an interview that I did here on the show, but she said part of the reason she's running for office, and people say to her, well, I'm not really into politics. She said, well, just know that if you don't express your political voice toward our civic outcomes, you're turning over your opinion to someone else, so they have double their opinion, right? That was an interesting way to think about it. She said, it's as if you're now going to say to someone who does care about the political environment, you have two votes, because I'm not going to exercise mine. I'm going to sit this one out. And she said, I don't think you always want other people making those decisions for you. It was a really interesting way to think about what political and civic engagement are about. Well, hey, we appreciate all of you being part of the civic engagement that is your radio station, whether you're listening online, whether you listen in your radio or through your smart speaker. We're glad that you're a part of this. And stick around. Lots of good things here on AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota, over the course of the evening. And that Labor Day weekend is sneaking up on us. So enjoy your final week of summer, everyone. Doug Padgett, I'll be back with you tomorrow.